Good morning.
Welcome to the Board of Public Works. We're going to start off today by honoring three incredible volunteers who have each given over $10,000. Not $10,000. They're also big donors. I must have been on the fundraising track. They've given 10,000 hours each, over 10,000. Service to the Patuxent Research Refuge, and collectively these three individuals and three of their colleague volunteers who weren't able to join us this morning, they've given more than 85,000 hours of volunteer service to the Patuxent Research Refuge, which I think is amazing. These volunteers assist the center with environmental education, wildlife surveys, trail monitoring, facilities maintenance, as well as visitor information and community outreach. And we're so proud to honor them. And all six of them, we want to thank them for their efforts. But the three that we want to honor here this morning, Frank McGilvery began volunteering in 1996 and has given more than 26,000 volunteer hours. That deserves a round of applause for Frank. Spent a lot of time monitoring waterfowl and interacting with visitors at the park. Since 1993, Rod Burley has over 12,000 hours of service to the refuge, assisting with visitor information and popular bird watching programs. Rod, let's give Rod a round of applause. And Claudia Papillo. Is it Papillo or Papillo?
Papillo
started volunteering at the refuge in 2004, so she came a little bit after the other fellows, but she's catching up because she already has given more than 10,000 hours of service, spending her entire weekends staffing the information desk and mentoring new volunteers. So I want to thank all of them for their dedication, their commitment. Your efforts not only serve the mission of the Patuxent Research Refuge, but also contribute greatly to our efforts to protect and preserve our great natural resource, the Chesapeake Bay, and our precious wetlands and waterways. So I want to say thank you. Let's give them a big round of applause. Thank you. Secretary's agenda. Madam Treasurer?
Governor, it's good to be here. It's possible that autumn may be coming at some point, which, as you all know, makes me complain a lot. I just want to congratulate. I don't know that much about it, but I read in the paper that the federal government saw the way to follow Maryland's lead.
We finally got approval, and we're going to be announcing that later this afternoon.
It's very exciting.
We've really done a lot. Exciting. We've protected a couple hundred thousand people's coverage on health care, and we've stopped 50% rate increases in their insurance. But now you blew the whole surprise.
That's great.
Thank you very much. Mr. Comptroller?
Thank you, Governor and Madam Treasurer. Frank Scatino and his wife, Tina, emigrated from Sicily, 1958, to Maryland. And 15 years later, Frank, who had been a butcher in his hometown of Lascari in Sicily, after 15 years in Catonsville, still didn't speak English, but one day he saw on the small deli that he'd bought some things from a notice, and it was a for sale notice. But he didn't quite understand the English, so he had to bring his daughter, Josie, down, who was a child, to translate. This is after 15 years in this country. So, ultimately, he bought it, he and Tina, and it has become a landmark up in Catonsville. This is the 42nd year, and I happened to stop by Scatino's Deli. Over the years, they've expanded, adding a market, pizza shop, and catering business. It's a Catonsville favorite ever since. They've drawn wide acclaim across the region for the authentic and delicious foods, one-of-a-kind Mediterranean products that line the shelves. After Frank passed away, Mama Tina, as she was known, his wife, continued to make her original Sicilian sauces, meatballs, and Italian meals. And she passed away last year at the age of 91. But I stopped by, and their daughter and son, Josie Scatino Schroeder and Sal Scatino, now own the deli and market. Their nephew, Lenny, was there, and their cousin, Francesco, who is a major investor. They're going to expand, by the way, into Western Howard County. And it was very inspiring to me because I felt as if I was looking at the greatness of America at that family. Because here's Frank Scatino, no education. Yeah, he had worked in Sicily as a butcher. But he arrived in this country, never really learned English. But he had a lot of intelligence, had a lot of business smarts. And he left this legacy of this ongoing, wonderful business. And I just wanted to give a shout-out to Josie, who translated back in 1973 the for sale sign, and Sal, their son. And they gave me two boxes of Sicilian recipe cookies for the governor and for the treasurer.
Treasurer.
And
hey, we'll pass these around the room. So I don't need all those calories.
Well, please pass it by me first, because Governor, if you're ever out in Catonsville, you may already have stopped by and seen this group, but they are truly emblematic of what exists all over the state of Maryland. I also stopped at Sugar Baker's there. I had Delegate Ebersol, who lives close by, and Sheriff Fisher, who is so popular out there. But if you want to have a civics lesson in the greatness of America, swing by that market in Delhi.
I say we do a site visit.
But I will also just finish by saying I enjoyed being in Ocean City and enjoyed visiting Trimpers. Yeah, is that it? Trimpers. Yeah, and we did the 125th anniversary. And we also stopped by the French fry place.
Thrashers.
You're in a consuming mode.
Yeah. Well, it was Shop Maryland Tax Free.
About a few extra pounds. French fries, cookies. He keeps trying to fatten me up, I think. For the slaughter, maybe.
No, I... if I'm blushing, there's a reason. Yeah. So, anyway, I didn't mean to go on and on about this particular family, but I've been in foreign countries, and I know, Governor, you have, and Madam Treasurer, and when you don't know the language, it's so bewildering to even understand what the context is of things. And I just think of Frank Scatino and what he must have had as far as grit and drive and determination and just work ethic to be able to create this legacy without fundamentally even understanding the language. So
thank you.
All the best to you, and enjoy the cookies. I had one last night. I won't tell you which box I opened. It was heavenly.
It used to be right there.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much. And now we're going to start.
Comptroller, yes. Can I just, one can't help but say, at this time in our nation's history where the leaders in Washington are talking about not only stopping people from coming into America, but sending back from America families exactly like the Scatino, who have been living here, working here, employing people here. I think I thank you for pointing out to us, to the public, to everybody, whether you're speaking English, Italian, Spanish, or any other of God's languages, we need people here, and they should be here, and they do great things here, and I'm sure they make very good cookies here. But this is a time when I think we all have to join hands and speak up for all the members of our community, and I thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Sheila.
Thank you, Governor. Madam Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller, this morning we have 17 items on the Secretary's agenda. There are 10 reports of emergency procurements. We are prepared to respond to your questions.
I'd like to talk about item A10.
Item A10 is an emergency report from the State Department of Education about the audit that they had to award for Sturgis County Public Schools is June. Oh, Dr. Salmon's here.
Very good. Well, good morning, Dr. Salmon.
Good morning, Governor. How are you? And Comptroller and Treasurer, it's nice to be here today.
Thank you. Very nice to have you with us.
Be glad to
give you
some.
I just want to speak in favor of this, and then maybe you might have some questions. But,
great.
As I understand it, this is an emergency report from the State Department of Education regarding the contract for the follow-up audit investigation into grade tampering in the Prince George's County public school system. And after the county refused to investigate the allegations of widespread corruption, the Prince George's County delegation unanimously requested the state to investigate. And the results of the initial audit were extremely troubling. With just a sampling, not doing the entire school system, but just a partial sample, they found more than 5,000 students who had their grades changed improperly, and that hundreds and hundreds of students were either ineligible or lacked documentation to graduate, some of them with absences over 40%, even though they missed more than 50 days of class. In some cases, they were graduated. County leaders dismissed these findings as sloppy record-keeping and crossing T's and dotting I's. But the teachers' union, the NAACP, and hundreds of citizens in Prince George's County thought it was more serious than that, and so did the State Board of Education. And now was so troubled by the findings and by some of the more recent allegations that they've ordered a follow-up investigation to get to the bottom of this. And it appears that some of our kids are being cheated out of the education that they deserve. And corruption and wrongdoing is something we cannot tolerate in our school systems, no matter where. Prince George's County is not alone in having problems. The former Baltimore County school superintendent was sentenced to jail. Another former Baltimore County school employee has been indicted and is serving as an informant to a federal corruption investigation of a state senator. And Howard County's former superintendent left in disgrace after misleading teachers and parents about dangerous mold in the classrooms. So during the last legislative session, we introduced an Accountability in Education Act to establish an independent inspector general in the Department of Education with the power to investigate allegations of corruption, improper, and unethical behavior in our schools. And we proposed providing $2.5 million in funding to create an education monitoring unit and an office of compliance and oversight. Unfortunately, the legislature did not agree that there should be any real accountability for the record $25 billion in state taxpayer money that we put into our schools. But I want to just be on the record today to say we are going to continue to push very hard for robust oversight and accountability, because no child in the state of Maryland should ever have to suffer because of the failures of their responsible adult leaders. I just wanted to say thank you for bringing the item before the board, and I'm very much in favor of funding this to continue the investigation.
Thank you, Governor. I just want to add that we are too committed to your initiative. And through working with DVM, we've managed to restructure some of our existing PINs. And we are getting ready to recommend two people to the State Board next week that will be an Office of Compliance. And I'm very excited for the individuals that we're about to hire with their skills. And they will be also assisting Alvarez with the contract in making sure that we do our due diligence. And I want to thank Secretary Brinkley for his assistance in allowing us to do that.
Well, thank you, and thank you for your leadership, Dr. Simon.
Thank you very much.
Could I just ask a question about the specific?
Absolutely.
So they had the audit. Alvarez did the audit. That's a question, not a statement. Did Alvarez?
Yes, Alvarez
the audit?
Did the first audit.
And now this is telling them to go back.
This
and
is going to be for this last group of children that graduated in 2018. They were looking in the at 2016, 17, 17, 18. Now this will be for the students that just graduated. We want to make sure that what PG says they're doing in their action plan that they are doing, that they have put in practices that will preclude the situations from occurring again. So it is a follow-up, and it is going to be more comprehensive and looking at more students than the first audit did.
Okay. So it's a first-cut audit of 2018.
Yes.
And a compliance.
Absolutely.
A check on compliance.
Yes.
Thank you.
Yes, I'm glad the governor brought this up and the treasurer noted that, that clarification. It's not just the education advocates that should be outraged at this, because obviously the kids have been deprived of their constitutional right to a public education or a good public education. But how about the Maryland taxpayers? I mean, why aren't we all outraged, particularly with these significant salary raises that went to Prince George's County school administrators that were aware of the fraudulent and unethical practices that were occurring in their own system? Let me just, why do I know that? Well, thanks to young elected officials, or appointed, I'm not sure how they got to be on the school board, but two members of the school board, Ed Burrows and David Murray, two kids that look like they just got out of school, but boy, they were a voice for reform and transparency. And I want to thank Ed and David for exhibiting courageous leadership in exposing these unethical and morally corrupt practices. And without them, we would never have paid attention to them. And I hope, Madam Superintendent, if there are other systems that may not have this wide scale of problem but have this tendency, because I can see it in human nature, why not make our statistics look better from time to time? I hope that you are vigilant as far as all of the systems in the state. And thank you for your leadership.
Absolutely.
Dr. Sam.
Thank you all
thank
very
you.
Much.
Thank you so much. Next, if we could bring up item 8, we have somebody signed up to speak on this. It's a $120,000 neighborhood business works loan from the Department of Housing and Community Development for a redevelopment project on Howard Street in Baltimore City. And we have a Mr. Frederick.
Garriott.
He's
disappeared.
Maybe.
He was here.
Hey, we'll come back to him later then. Any? Are there any other questions?
Yeah, Governor, could I just say on those two items from DHCD business loan? I just think we said this before, but this is a terrific program, and whoever in DHCD is in charge of it, I think you're doing exactly what the state should be doing.
Thank you.
Is that Mr. Jarrett?
Secretary
Holden. Yeah, thank you. Secretary Holden and his whole team, I think, are doing an excellent job. Thank you for saying that. And Mr. Garriott?
You want to introduce yourself? Garriott.
Greetings. Hi, my name is Frederick Garriott. I'm the Chief Operating Officer and Chief Financial Officer for the guarantor of this proposed Neighborhood Business Development Program loan, LaMondo. We're a small arts nonprofit real estate development company in downtown Baltimore. I just wanted to come here to speak in support of the Howard Street Incubator 406 LLC application for Neighborhood Business Development Program financing. I also wanted to express my appreciation to the Department of Housing and Community Development and all the good folks over there that have done a lot to help us get to this point, to be on this agenda, and also to thank you, Governor, and the legislative body that has made this funding possible. I'm available to speak more about this if you all would like to hear anything else, or to invite you all out to a ribbon cutting later this month, hopefully. Next month, I'm sorry, jumping the gun there a bit. Just say thank you.
Well, thank you so much for coming here this morning, and thank you for complimenting our good folks at the Department of Housing and Community Development. We think they do a good job, too, and the Treasurer said the same thing right before you walked in, so thank you, and it sounds like a great project, and we're so happy to be a small part of it, and thank you for your work in the community.
Appreciate that. And Governor, if I could just add in, I've been long enough on the board long enough to see this program misdirected, where we funded a Popeyes fast food restaurant on Route 50. And this is not under your, you probably were still in college or something, but it was, it's a program that is subject to abuse if it doesn't have a lot of oversight and vigilance. And for example, the Green Turtle, I remember, got something out of this, this is a perfect example of how this program was designed to be used. And I can't wait to see, I don't need to come to the ribbon cutting, but I'd be delighted to come up and look at the Arts Theater Studio Bar and Cafe. I think it's going to be a game changer for the city of Baltimore along that once grand boulevard. And congratulations and kudos.
I think my wife would love to come out to be there for the ribbon cutting because she's a big arts advocate. Micah, professor, works in Baltimore. She'll love to send her by your cafe.
And maybe absolutely. You could put a craft beer brewery in there.
I'm surely partnering with them.
Thank you so much.
We'll have a party. Can I ask you one question? How did you find out about the Neighborhood Business Development Program?
We've been really blessed to have the support of Miss Amy Bonnets from the Baltimore Arts Real Estate Company, or Realty Company, who is very knowledgeable about these government for the state programs as well as local programs, and she's been a great help in directing us toward these resources, as I know she has for a number of other arts organizations.
So it's
in
like
Baltimore
a city,
city.
Or a community facilitator.
Our facility, ma'am?
A facilitator, a navigator, somebody who...
She was on the mayor's task force for preserving art spaces and has really taken her role very seriously, and it's been an amazing help.
That's terrific.
Thank you very much for joining us this morning.
Thank you.
And I agree with you, Mr. Comptroller, about how we ought to use these funds. But I don't want to disparage Popeyes or Green Turtle. I think they're great. I'm the consumer of their products. But you shouldn't be giving them government money, I agree.
Governor, could I just point out the next one also, since we're talking about it, is just another example, not in Baltimore, but in Hagerstown, the same sort of use of a relatively limited amount of money to spur not only other investment, but actually the creation and uplifting of a neighborhood.
Very good. Thank you. Are there any other
item one?
Item one?
Yes.
All right. Is Mr. Askell here from the Department of Agriculture?
That's okay. I'll explain it.
I was going to say yes. Could you let us know?
It's an $801,000 program to give from the state to private farmers to implement best management practices to reduce soil and nutrient runoff from Maryland farms. I'm happy with this because it highlights our state's firm commitment to cleaning up the Chesapeake Bay. Last month's heavy rainfall and flooding underscored the level of pollution that flows downstream from Pennsylvania and New York, and hopefully served as a call to action for all states within the Chesapeake Bay watershed to do their part and be good neighbors as Maryland seeks to preserve and protect one of our most cherished national treasures. I had an excellent conversation with Secretary Grumbles yesterday morning. He was kind enough to update me, Governor, on your administration's ongoing efforts after we saw tons of trash, debris, and sediment washing up on our shores after the gates of the Conowingo Dam were opened in response to the recent storms. Pennsylvania, meanwhile, continues to fall short in doing their part to protect the Susquehanna River and ultimately the Chesapeake Bay from nitrogen pollution. Governor, you have my sincere thanks for your leadership, especially as chair of the Chesapeake Executive Council, for your stalwart commitment to protecting the Bay and for bringing partners and stakeholders together to accomplish this most challenging yet vitally important endeavor. And I mentioned to my dad, who I can't seem to talk into coming down here anymore, but I mentioned this Conowingo Dam issue to him. And he's 96 years old, and he just listened to all this facts about 90% of the Upper Bay water comes from the Susquehanna. They have to open the flood doors or whatever it is, and all this stuff just flows down during a big storm, and it ruins the progress we're making on the Bay. And he said, well, that's a big problem. But he said, you know, Peter, with every problem, there comes an opportunity. And why in God's name doesn't the state just give a tax credit to Maryland businesses to use this silt that you can dredge out of there? And for every dump truck full of silt that you can move down to use for some kind of commercial purpose, your private sector in Maryland gets a small incentive. And, you know, think big. Get opportunities. And I mentioned it to Secretary Brumbull. He says he's already working on that with your RFP. But, you know, we sit around.
You consulted with your dad before you talked to you.
Yeah. But, you know, that's true. Every big problem and crisis creates an opportunity. And so hopefully the RFP can move forward despite the court case. I think we should be dredging sooner rather than later, in addition to Pennsylvania doing the right thing and, you know, catching up with us as far as their land use practices.
Well, thank you very much.
And thank you for, I don't know how you turned that meeting of the commission from, we were launching some pretty heavy attacks down here at the last Board of Public Works meeting, but somehow someone calmed everyone down and it looked like
there was a consensus. Well, we had some pretty direct conversations in a private meeting, and Pennsylvania, I think, agreed that they need to redouble their efforts. And you know, we're making some progress. We didn't need to beat them up at the public hearing. You can disagree without being disagreeable, and I think we're going to make some real progress with Pennsylvania and New York and the EPA and with Exelon. And it's been an issue that I've been focused on for 5 years, and I can tell you we're making progress. And I want to thank Secretary Grumbles for his leadership. You know, the Bay's the cleanest it's been ever since they've been reporting these things for 33 years. We have dolphins swimming in the Bay for the first time. We have 100,000 acres of paved grasses coming back. And you know, we invested $4 billion into Chesapeake Bay restoration programs in 4 years, which is twice as much as the previous administration did in 8 years. And we're very happy with our progress, but this is the one thing that, the next thing that we really have to go after. And it was one of the main topics of my campaign 4 years ago that we're going to try to do it. We have an RFP about to go out, and we're going to make other states do their fair share, because trust me, we've been doing more than our fair share, and we're going to get the rest of them on board, because it's their trash and debris that's flooding over that dam and into the Bay. So thank you for the comments. Any other questions on the Secretary?
So the producer, you know, the Department of Agriculture is represented today on item one, so she did appear and she was here.
Okay.
Thank you. Thank you very much for being here.
Yeah, I have one question on item. No, this is a different item.
Thank you. Okay. He was just praising you and the folks at Agriculture and
at the MDG. Thank you.
Item A3, please.
A3 is an emergency, and Mr. James is here from the Human Services Department. This is a emergency contract that he is reporting for a placement of two youth in the treatment center.
Good morning. I'm Greg James, Deputy Secretary for Operations from the Department of Human Services, and I'm joined today by Randy Walters, who is our new Deputy Secretary for Programs, as well as Tennille Thomas, who is our Chief of Staff of the Social Services Administration.
Thank you, Mr. James.
Yes, thank you, Mr. James, for working with everybody to reduce the number of out-of-state placements. This is a contract to send, unfortunately, in my opinion, two additional Maryland youth to a group out in Colorado called Southern Peaks. And I do want to express my gratitude to you and the administration, because I think you're making a lot of progress in getting these out-of-state placements returned to Maryland, and that's good.
But I did have a question about the research that you do before sending kids, for example, to Colorado to this particular facility. My staff noted in a Google search that they had in November 2016 to May 2017, police received 72 reports of juveniles running away from this particular facility. I think they said they were elopements, eloping. They were eloping from the facility. Well, I'm not sure that my staff, I know my staff communicated this to your folks, and I'm not sure they were even aware of it. And so I guess I wanted to just hear your comments on how you're ensuring the safety and well-being of these youth.
Certainly, Mr. Comptroller. With regard to the specific news article, when we researched, so I'm fairly certain that we had seen that article prior to making the initial placements at Southern Peaks, but when we researched to respond to the question, we couldn't find any affirmative evidence in our files. We couldn't find a copy of the article to say that we had seen it previously, and so we were not going to tell you that we had seen it if we couldn't sure. demonstrate with evidence that it was there. With regard to the substance of that report, yes, it is very concerning when you have that number of elopements, but I would point out this is a problem that we experience with this population in particular, with this nature of placements. It's a problem that we have with programs in Maryland. It's a problem that programs all across the country have, which is these youth who have been through these particularly traumatic experiences frequently want to leave campus, want to leave the property of the program. And the nature of these programs, the staff are prohibited from physically restraining the youth from walking off campus. And there's no fences. These are not prisons. These are not detainment facilities. These are treatment facilities. And so if a youth wants to walk off the grounds, then they can do that. But the response by this program to that is exactly what we would want, which is they immediately contact the local law enforcement so that they can help them. Once they're off grounds, they're considered at risk. So the local law enforcement will assist them in bringing the youth back to the campus. The staff will physically follow the youth when they walk off campus so that they keep them in sight, so that it's not as if these children are simply running away and are gone into the night. It's very much an appropriate process of engaging local law enforcement and the entire community to support the mission of the program. And so that's been the approach here. Now, I would also note that since that report, this program has put into place a number of additional measures to help support that. They've paid for additional off-duty local sheriff's office and law enforcement personnel to assist them when children elope. They've increased their staffing on campus to reduce the number of elopements. They've changed their staffing patterns and their program patterns to especially deal with the transition times and the periods of time in the day, you know, lunch times and transition between programs, lights out. Those are the times where we know that children are most likely to try and elope. And so they've adjusted their program to deal with that. They've also worked out a notification system so that the local community has a notice when a child leaves campus and can assist, and also has notice so that they can take appropriate measures to protect themselves, which is exactly the type of community engagement that we'd like.
Okay.
Yes, sir.
That's fine. Maybe you could just update me on the most current figures for how many Maryland youth are still in out-of-state treatment facilities, and what's the timeline for getting them to come back to the state? Because I assume you would like to have these two kids not in Colorado, but here in Maryland,
Certainly. One of those youth that was at Southern Peaks has since been reunified with her mother in California. So we're down to one youth at Southern Peaks as of today. As of today, we have 16 DHS-placed youth out of state. There's one co-committed youth between the Department of Human Services and Juvenile Services. who is out of state. Of those, we know of at least five that are on track to be returned to Maryland within the next 180 days. Now, I want to be very forthright with the board. We also have five youth that right now we may be looking at out-of-state placement for. We are doing everything in our power to try and keep them in the state of Maryland, but we also need to secure an appropriate placement for them for their safety and security and well-being, and that's what we're working towards with those. Our goal has been and continues to be to try and get that number below 10 in terms of youth. The number of youth who are out of state, nine fall into those exception categories that we've talked about in the past. We have a RFP statement of need that's been in process to stand up some additional programs in Maryland, including programs that will address some of the youth that are being placed out of state, including at Southern Peaks. We are just completing that evaluation for that procurement and expect that to be done, the evaluation to be done by the end of this month.
Thank you, Mr. James.
Thank you
for the great work that you're doing, the progress you're making.
Thank you. And if I may take a moment of the board's time, I've constantly said that this is a team effort. I really want to recognize Danielle Thomas, who has done incredible work with this population. She knows every one of these kids, has reviewed every one of their cases, and knows all the details about them and helps us make all this progress. And so she does not receive recognition.
We appreciate both of you. Are there any other questions on the Secretary's agenda?
I have a question. It's on A, 4, 5, and 6, but it's actually to Secretary Churchill, although it's public safety and health. Chillers, this an example of a problem. Chillers way beyond their life can't be patched up any longer. Go wrong. Leak, impact, everything else cost a great deal more money than they would have if they had been replaced earlier, especially with energy efficient equipment. This is exactly the sort of thing that we have been talking about repeatedly in the past. Not, I don't know if this is a DGS project at all, but it's happening all across state government. What are we doing to, in a cost-effective way, to bring the different departments together and help them realize that if we have this sort of plan that you had been talking about before, of mapping out where all of these expensive pieces of equipment are that are about to go bad and that would have been saving us money had we replaced them a decade earlier, well, where are we?
Thank you for the question, Madam Treasurer. And as we have indicated before, with General Services, we are putting together a plan and are moving on an initiative to...
But this is another example of something that's not in General
this
Services.
This is. And since we had a conversation about that
right. About
a month or so ago, and we've been in contact with other agencies that have facilities and are trying to understand the... mechanisms that they have in place that may be similar to our own in terms of understanding their facility needs. So we're in conversation with other agencies, and we're going to continue to do that in terms of...
First of all, it's the cost of the equipment. Secondly, it's the benefit for foregone, both in terms of cost and the impact on the environment and operating programs. Mm-hmm. And there's no... good aspect of something like this happening, unless it's a lessons learned.
That
so
is correct.
To turn it into a lessons learned.
And the lessons learned at the start of that is to make sure that all of our departments are up on their maintenance plans and their regular servicing of equipment so that they can get indicators before the time that it turns into an emergency to move forward with a plan for a facilities renewal.
Great idea, but how do we see that that's done?
Well, at this point, we're working together collaboratively, each of our facilities department, and basically a work group to understand that. And so as soon as we have more information about what other departments are doing, we're going to put together what the best practices are that each of our departments can utilize moving forward.
Mr. Secretary, Governor, could I suggest all you have to do is read the last few years, probably last decade, but just take the last few years, of the Board of Public Works agendas, and you will find every time or every other time an example of something like this. With people, the best intention people in the world, nobody wants a problem like this or unnecessary costs like this, but somehow the system isn't working. And I pick on you because you sit there and I know you're concerned about it, but it's every other department, whether it's in capital planning or what, that there's got to be a system to avoid these repeated
situations. There's no question that the deferred maintenance over the last 20 or 30 years is now coming home to roost. And we're doing everything we can to start fixing these problems that should have been fixed 10 or 20 years ago, but it's very expensive.
Well,
we can't do it overnight.
Back before 20 years. I mean, it's always been like
the State House complex is a perfect example. The entire system has to be, we have to tear up Lawyers Mall. It's going to be, the whole place is going to be a mess for 2 years because for 50 years nobody did anything about the steam plant, or 100 years. Right. So we're fixing it.
So I'm convinced, Governor, that the Secretary has got a handle on this and
he has
plans in mind. The question then is how to bring everybody else into it.
It's a good plan.
Plus, there's the
pest and rodent problem. Once we get the report done, we'll cover this at a cabinet meeting that for all people that do their own individual facilities maintenance. Thank you. Any other questions on the Secretary's agenda? Is there a motion?
Move approval.
Second. Second. 3-0. Now we move on to the DNR real property agenda. Secretary Falcon.
Good morning, Governor, Mr. Comptroller, Madam Treasurer. For the record, my name is Mark Belton. I'm the Secretary of the Maryland Department of Natural Resources. We have 15 items on our agenda this morning. Item 15 is a hand carry, including our Rural Legacy Program awardees, who will take a minute or two to cycle into the room because there's a lot of
them. Yeah, well, thank you. First of all, while we're waiting for some of those folks to come in the room, Secretary Belton, I just want to thank you. We talked about Secretary Grumbles and his work and the folks at Agriculture, but I just want to single out DNR's incredible job that you've done assisting people all over the state in removing this debris from marinas and navigable waterways. And it was a yeoman's task that we'd never expected to have that kind of a problem, but I think it was great cooperation between the state agencies and all of our local governments, and I just want to thank you, and please pass on my congratulations to your team for the work that they were doing in clearing out the bay.
Thank you, sir.
And you got that Steelers football out of the Annapolis Harbor.
And the Pennsylvania Wildlife Management sign, too. That's right.
Oh, I didn't see that one. Pennsylvania Wildlife Management sign.
Yes, sir.
Well, while we're waiting for the rest of the people to fill in, we're stalling for time. There was the whole Annapolis Harbor filled. Ego Alley was filled with stumps and trees and trash, and they took photos of all this, and there's a Pittsburgh Steelers football floating on the top. So we make sure we put that picture up, and we posted it on Facebook the day that I was hammering the Pennsylvania folks about their trash coming into our bay. And I think it had an impression. But we posted it up just to try to convince Pennsylvania that it was their stuff. But we got a bigger reaction than that because hundreds of Ravens fans were outraged. They said, get that trash out of our harbor. So it was cleaning up the bay, and it was a good way to get back at the Pittsburgh Steelers. Thank you. But, we have... you go through your whole agenda already, what you had. You want to go through the number of items, and did you say that?
I did, sir. Yes.
Okay. So I know we have a lot of folks here with us today for the Rural Legacy Grant Awards, and I want to say, this is the first time in, I think, more than a decade that we've fully funded program open space. We've increased and enhanced the Rural Legacy Program, and this is a very important program to preserve large tracts of valuable open space, protecting vital agriculture, natural and cultural resources that they provide. And so today we're awarding 16 Rural Legacy Program grants totaling $25 million. And we'd like to have all of our awardees come up with you, Mr. Secretary, and with us to take a picture. And we want to congratulate every single one of you for all that you do to protect and preserve our state's natural resources. Let's give them all a big round of applause.
Governor, can I just add one point on rural legacy? The double picture, I think, is indicative of how successful this program has become.
You doubled the program.
Yes, sir. And if I could just point out that this particular day is a really milestone day for rural legacy, because not only through program open space formula and your initiative to fully fund that, are we able to provide more than $25 million for the program this year. That's the largest amount since 2007. But we're also expanding five existing rural legacy areas and creating a brand new one, which you're aware of, the Harriet Tubman Rural Legacy Area in Dorchester County. So it's a real exciting day for the program.
Well, thank you for your leadership. I appreciate it. Your department's doing a great job, and I want to thank all of the participants.
Move approval.
Is there a second?
Second.
I'll say aye. Oh, the ayes have it.
Thank you.
The ayes appear to have it 3-0. We're going to move on to the BBM agenda. Secretary Brinkley.
Good morning, Governor, Mr. Comptroller, Madam Treasurer. The Department has submitted six items for your consideration. Item 6S is supplemental. For the record, I'm David Brinkley, the Secretary of the Department of Budget and Management. We have people here to address any questions or concerns that you may have.
I'd like to talk about item 6, please.
Item 6, Dr. Salmon and Steve Brooks, the Senior Financial Advisor.
Good morning again, Dr.
Good morning,
Salmon.
Governor. Good morning,
Sorry we
treasure.
Couldn't do both of yours together when you were on two different
That's all right. It's a pleasure to see all the things that are happening across the state, and it's good to take stock of it.
Well, thank you very much. I understand this is the companion contract to what we talked about last time, and I'm pleased that this is for the final park assessment that will ever be administered in the state of Maryland?
Yes, sir.
And I know that back in March you told us that this is going to be needed as part of the bridge contract to get us to the new Maryland Comprehensive Assessment Program. And the one thing this board has raised serious concerns about since I've been here is single-bid contracts. And last time you were here before us, I know the comptroller raised some serious concerns, and many of which I share. However, I also understand that if we do not have the assessment in place, that you will not be able to satisfy your ESSA plan requirements, and you certainly cannot be in a position where we could jeopardize $310 million in federal funds for our school systems. The legislature failed to pass the Protect Our Students Act of 2018. Last year, instead, they passed what I refer to as the Protect Our Failing Schools Act, which made Maryland the second least accountable school system in America. And I agree with Rick Kerwin, who chaired the Commission on Innovation and Excellence in Education, who recently said that our school system needs real accountability with teeth. We talked about this earlier. We're going to continue to push for more accountability in the school systems. Clearly, I know that you have to have these assessments in place to ensure accountability for the students and that everybody's performing the way they're supposed to. But I don't think I have to tell you, Dr. Salmon, that nearly everyone in Maryland, parents, teachers, students, and the governor, want these tests to end. They're not happy that we're continuing with these park tests. So it's frustrating that we haven't been able to get rid of them yet when nearly everybody else in the country has. But again, in spite of my serious reservations, I am going to reluctantly vote yes on this proposal because we can't afford to lose the federal funding. But I just want reassurance from you to the board that this new Maryland Comprehensive Assessment Program will be up and running by the time that this contract expires, and that we won't have to be talking about extensions of our contracts ever again.
Absolutely, Governor. And I'm reminiscing today about being in this room a number of years ago when I was superintendent in Talbot County. The comptroller loves to tell stories, and I do too, so we share that
affinity.
We'd love
to hear your story because we've heard enough of this.
Okay. So my story is I was here with a previous administration. We won't mention any names. But we were talking about school construction and funding in Talbot County, and we were asking for money for the St. Michael's High School campus, which was well overdue. I mean, the place was falling down literally around the feet of our children, my own included. And I said to the administration and to the governor, I said, I promise you we will not be back to ask you for more money for public schools in Talbot County. And I upheld that promise. So I'm here today again in the same room to promise you that we are moving on to our Maryland assessment. We're very excited. We have hired, she's here today, Dr. Judkins. Will you stand up and be recognized? We've hired a wonderful psychometrician, guru, and assessment for our new, she's our new assistant state superintendent for assessment and accountability from California, who worked with Smarter Balance. And she has been tasked from day one to developing a Maryland computer adapted assessment. And we are on the way to do that. We hope to be back with you in October to talk to you about who is going to be awarded the grants for the Maryland assessment and how Maryland teachers are going to be involved in developing that assessment. And we look forward to meeting the timelines, which are rigorous, but we are working very, very hard to make sure we're in line for the 2018-19 school year. So,
well, thank you very
much.
Sorry,
19-20 school year.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much, and thank you for your great leadership at the school system. And you mentioned you were here to talk about opening a new St. Michael's school. I was thrilled to be up in Allegheny County.
I know you were. I saw the pictures, Governor.
To open, that was the oldest school in the entire state, 93 years old, and we finally opened new Allegheny High. And this week we're opening five new schools in Baltimore City with the 21st Century Schools Program. And so it's
very
exciting. I think we're at 124 new schools in
That's correct.
3.5 years. It's not bad. And I want to thank you for your leadership. And
thank you, Governor.
I just wanted to again make sure.
I appreciate
that. I hear about this issue.
I know you do.
Over and over again, no matter where I go, everybody just despises these tests.
And I want to tell you that your talking points were probably just much better than mine, so thank you.
Well, I didn't. You know, I don't want it to seem like we're beating you up today by calling you up twice and asking tough questions. I really think
you know I can take.
I think you're doing an amazing job, and I want to thank you for your leadership.
Thank you, Governor.
Thank you.
I agree with the Governor also that you're doing a terrific job. I'm going to vote no on this because it's $11.7 million. Today happens to be the day that a lot of systems are getting their teachers to come back, even though the kids don't come until school after Labor Day, which is extremely popular. But my message to those teachers is that we've made a huge mistake with this program. We wasted $191 million over the last few years. This company that barely performed. We used to have a huge number of states. Now all we have is, let's see, states that I really like to see Maryland associated with. Illinois, New Jersey. Well, I don't mind D.C. They're my neighbor. New Mexico and Maryland. That's it. That's the group. And as the governor mentioned, D.C. were piggybacking on their bid. They only received a single bid. So that's another reason to vote against this contract. This will be the 15th single bid contract for this year, putting us on pace for 21 throughout total single bid contracts throughout 2018. I emphasize this is a huge drop from 82 single bid contracts approved in 2013 and 64 single bid contracts approved in 2014. So I applaud the administration and the treasurer and others that understand that single bid contracts tend to be vendor incumbent protection programs, not real competitive, not obviously something that benefits the taxpayers. So I have two reasons to vote against this, but the primary reason is that we have year after year after year yielded to this supposed threat from the federal government, which I believe is non-existent since it's never been implemented. That somehow there would be a problem if we took a sabbatical from the park and other onerous tests. Teachers hate them. Kids hate them. Families hate them. They have nothing to do with accountability. They haven't improved our school systems at all, period. If anything, they have created these corruption problems that exist around in our different systems where people are just kind of move through the shadows and get their degrees. So I think there are plenty of areas in public education where we could have spent $191 million rather than this ineffective assessment that the majority of states across the nation have already abandoned. But unless the treasurer is having a weak moment and wants to join me, I guess I'm going to lose once again. But my message to the teachers coming back today is very clear. Help is on the way, and I appreciate the new person coming on. This is a fetish which we have in Maryland with testing. It's wrong. It needs to be trimmed back to the bare essentials. So please keep that in mind as you move forward, because I know you want accountability. We all want accountability, but we don't need this situation that we've gotten into with testing that it turns our whole curriculum upside down. So thank you for letting me say that, Dr. Salmon. I couldn't agree with the governor more. I think you're doing a fabulous job, and I understand completely what the governor says about the pressure that you're under. I just happen to disagree.
Thank you, Comptroller.
Thank you. So I guess we have to pull that item out from...
Yeah, could I just ask Dr. Salmon one question? I mean, you know where I am.
Yes,
on,
Treasurer.
On this. You're developing the Maryland test, and the development includes not only the metrics, but the substance, which will be a product not only of your office, but... Who else is working on it?
Well,
parents, teachers?
Well, yes, we will certainly have, field-tested items and released items for people to respond to along the development process. But whomever we bring back to in October will be the people that are actually constructing the items from our bank.
And they will be geared specifically to Maryland
absolutely.
Goals.
Yes, they will be based on the Maryland College and Career Standards. Nothing about that changes. We are still moving forward in that rigorous way so that we can ensure that all of our students are ready for post-secondary education.
Yeah. Why don't you bring the test to us and give it to us before you give it to the kids?
I will think about giving
Seriously.
You a sample test. That's a very good idea.
That's a good idea.
I have another quick story, if I may. I did that with the Eastern Shore delegation when I was president of the Superintendents Association on the Eastern Shore, and I gave them a sample high school assessment test and told them that waiting in the wings were the media for the scores, and for a minute you should have seen their faces, and I said, no, just kidding. But I have to tell you, Comptroller, it was probably the most informative meeting we had with legislators, was to have them look at what the students were expected to know. So it's a great idea.
Well, it's very encouraging to hear that you're going to kind of start from scratch and make it Maryland-based, because the last thing we want is a park light with a Maryland flag stuff on the front
cover. And I have, that's, I got it. I remember from March 28th you said that, sir.
Well, thank you very much. So we're going to pull this out for a separate vote. I'll
move approval on the rest.
There's a motion to move approval on the rest of the agenda.
Okay.
Is that seconded? 3-0, and now we'll...
A motion on item 6.
I'll motion to approve this item. Is there a second?
Second.
So the vote is 2-1.
Thank you.
Mr. Comptroller, thank you. And now we're going to move on to the university system agenda.
Good morning. Jill Evans, representing the University System of Maryland. We have 4 items on the agenda. We are withdrawing item 4CDP.
Thank you, Mr. Evans. Any questions on the university system?
Yes, item 1.
Which?
Item 1 is a $737,000 request to build a glass wall for a lab in the new A. James Clark Hall, University of Maryland College Park. I wanted to take just a minute to ask about the apparent legal settlement that's been reached with former Maryland football strength and conditioning coach Rick Court. Like all Marylanders, I was appalled and angered to read the ESPN expose a few weeks ago that revealed the existence of a culture in the football program that seemed to focus more on winning games and titles than the well-being of the students. This careless disregard of the coaches and other university employees and administrators who had knowledge of this culture of negligence is a stain on the reputation of the university community, to the state of Maryland, and to college sports. It's my hope that the Board of Regents investigation and that of external investigators that have been hired will provide answers to the many serious questions and allegations that have been made about the football program and its executive staff. While the University of Maryland has refused to publicly confirm the existence of the financial settlement to the tune of $315,000, according to several media reports that led to the resignation of Coach Court, it is my sincere hope that the university intends on bringing this settlement, should there be one, before this board for review and scrutiny. As the state's principal fiscal officers, this board should have the opportunity to review the terms of the financial settlement and have our questions answered. So with that, let me just pivot back, Mr. Evans, and ask you, why is the university spending on this item $737,000 on a glass wall?
I'd like to bring up Bill Olin, who is the executive director for design and construction at University of Maryland College Park.
Thanks, Joe. Morning, Governor.
Morning.
Treasurer, Comptroller Francho. Bill Olin, Executive Director, College Park Service Center. Your question about item 1, it is not just for one lab, it's the length of the building. After we constructed Clark Hall, the ground floor is an open makerspace forum. There's been about 20 stations built for the students to work, undergrads and graduate students to work on different types of projects, from mock-up UAVs to bioengineering design projects, and there's a security issue. Since those 20 stations are the length of the building, a two-story space, just beautiful sort of studio space, concern was to have it secured so folks couldn't go in there overnight and disrupt, disturb that those projects, because the projects will last the length of the semester, maybe even beyond that, depending on whether it's an undergraduate or graduate student class. So the intent was, we talked about this during the construction. We waited until after. We didn't want to disrupt the construction of the building to look at this. The reason it's a glass wall is there's interest in having folks be able to look into these labs. So the students, the grad students, the faculty will be able to get in there. They can see what they're building, whether it's prospective students or folks, leaders from the commercial community, able to see what we're doing in the building. So it's a glass wall on the outside. The exterior of the building faces this space, and then allow folks to walk by and look and interact without touching what's in the lab. So that's the purpose of this wall.
Okay, and I'm sure it's specialized glass, but you understand my concern, which is that's about 69 in-state graduate students' tuition, $737,000 that we could be spending on those scholarships, but instead we're spending it on a glass wall, which I understand is largely for security. I can understand that, but I don't quite get the year-round use of the 20 cubicles by the same people.
Still, we did not spend all the budget and amount in the project. This would have been part of the project. We just weren't finished with the details when Clark Construction finished the project last year.
Okay.
So we could have had it inside. At one point, we were talking about having Clark do it, but we waited to look at different options, the most cost-effective option to provide this space, to allow folks to look in, to interact with it without touching.
Got it. Okay. And, Mr. Evans, if you could just at some point maybe get back to the board, or maybe the board has other views than I do, but I hope this settlement with the conditioning coach comes before us.
When I go back, I will pass that on.
Thank you very much. Is there a motion?
You want to bring back item four?
No, ma'am. Not at this time.
What? Is there a motion on the university system?
Move approval.
Second. 3-0 on that. We're going to move on to information technology.
Good morning, Governor, Madam Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller. For the record, I'm Michael Leahy, Secretary of the Department of Information Technology. Today we have 6 items on the agenda, and there are representatives from various agencies to answer any questions you might have.
Questions on information technology?
So I just want to bring to the thank you, Mr. Secretary, for putting on this, the Annapolis Data Center's Disaster Recovery Services, and we're asking for a 1-year extension. My agency runs the data center for all of the other agencies of the state, and I really appreciate the work of the IT oversight and supervisors, but I do want to give a shout-out to Don Coffey, who is one of the many public servants in the Comptroller's Office, that is committed to delivering respectful, responsive, and results-oriented service, and he is associated with the IT program. On occasion, I go on my agency's Facebook page and read comments from taxpayers, and Don received high praise from a taxpayer who messaged out Facebook page with an issue which Donald was able to resolve to the taxpayer's satisfaction within an hour. And the taxpayers started out very angry and ended up very pleased with the work that Don Coffey did. So thanks to all the wonderful employees of the Comptroller's Office and the Data Center, and thank you, Secretary, for extending this contract for us.
Thank you very much. Any other questions? Is there a motion?
Move approval.
Second. 3-0. We'll move on to the Department of Transportation.
Good morning, Governor, Madam Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller. For the record, my name is Pete Ron. I'm the Secretary of the Maryland Department of Transportation. MDOT has 9 items before the board today.
Any questions on transportation? Is there a motion?
Move approval.
Second, 3-0. We move on to the Department of General Services, Secretary Churchill.
Well, good morning, Governor, Madam Treasurer, and Mr. Comptroller. For the record, I am Ellington Churchill, Secretary for the Department of General Services. Department has 34 items on our agenda, including one supplemental. We are withdrawing items 7, 31, 32, and 33. We have representation here to answer any questions that you may have.
Okay, thank you. I think we have Delegate Anderson here who wants to speak on item 27. Delegate, good morning. Welcome.
Good morning.
I'm not sure. We've been here a while. I don't want to watch. What is it?
It's
11:15. Okay, it's still morning. On the Eastern Shore, maybe it's afternoon.
Always afternoon. So you know that. Madam Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller, Mr. Governor, just wanted to come by and just thank you for always looking out for us on the Lower Shore, especially Salisbury. We've come a long way in 4 years. And, you know, I'm just really excited. I've seen, you know, with open space being fully funded, that's great. You know, and a lot of things I've learned today just sitting in the back here, you know, we're moving in the right direction. I think it's very awesome. And so I just want to thank you for your support, and I look forward to taking some time that I have to spend with the budget secretary to work on the next opportunity for me to stand in front of you.
I hope you didn't take it personally when Dr. Salmon talked about giving the high school test to the delegation. I said some of the folks on the Eastern Shore delegation might have a hard time. I didn't mention you by name.
No. But it was very, very smart. I would have got about a 48%. So, you know. You know, obviously, the situation with the Conowingo, with the football making its way from Pittsburgh, I'm glad that we sent it back with the other garbage. So it's always good. Go Ravens. But anyway, I just wanted to
thank you,
just
Delegate,
say thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Absolutely.
Appreciate you being here.
Thank you.
And is there a motion on?
I would just like to echo Delegate Anderson's comment about the Lower Shore and your support for it, Governor. Particularly like the $1 million grant to Salisbury, to make long overdue improvements and enhancements to Salisbury's Main Street streetscapes. The delegate was a former mayor of a town in that area. But Mayor Jake Day at Salisbury is doing an incredible job leading the great city of Salisbury. I'm looking forward to attending the National Folk Festival in a couple of weeks there. And maybe I could get up on stage or something, I'm not sure. But
well, I'm the co-chairman, and if you're nice to me, I'll invite you up on the stage with me.
So it's a big deal down there. There are going to be a lot of people coming from out of state. I know it would not have happened without the visionary leadership of Jake Day and his team. And I just wanted to recognize him, along with the delegate, for a lot of hard work and leadership for that festival. Thank you, Governor.
Yeah, thank you very much. So there's a motion.
Move approval.
Second. 3-0. Thank you. That concludes the Board of Public Works. Thank you all for joining us. Thank you for the cookies.